practical and applied is what we're looking for, whether or not it's in our products, but also in our business as well, because the product is one opportunity, but how we build software, the way we do that, AI also provides some really interesting opportunities there.
Hello everyone and welcome to the NZX Opening Bell podcast. My name's James Sharp. I'm one of the senior relationship managers here at The Exchange. We're recording this in May 2024, and today's episode forms a part of a series of conversations that we're having this month relating to technology. This month does, of course, coincide with the High Tech Awards at the end of the month, as well as the NZ Tech Week. And today, it is a pleasure to welcome an NZX-listed tech business that brings together tech with the magic of the movies. A very warm welcome from Vista Group CEO Stuart Dickinson and Matthew Liebman, who is the Chief Product Innovation and Marketing Officer. Stuart and Matthew, very warm welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So I guess, you know, magic of the movies, so that really kind of interested to get into how, you know, what Vista does. Could you give us just a sense of, you know, the Vista's mission and what does Vista do and in terms of the products you offer?
Yeah, so thanks. And thanks for the opportunity to come along and talk to today about our business. It's Vista Group. We've been around since the late 90s. And started with a really simple idea, actually, which was when you went to the movies, you used to queue up and buy tickets at one queue, and then you wanted some popcorn, you went across the hall to the candy bar, and none of the systems could actually do that on one place and one screen. And so the simple idea was put that together. We had a partnership, or were formed as a part of Village Force, which was a theatre or exhibitor that was operating. And so Vista Cinema, our marquee product, was born with this idea, put the two together, and we've grown since then. So roll the clock forward 24 years, and today our product is used all the way around the world, and we can talk more about that. But it brings together everything from the excitement around, hey, I need to buy a ticket to the movies, all the way through to fulfillment and then the monetization process at the end of it as well. So it's been quite the journey and very, very exciting sitting at the intersection of tech and also entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned, you know, that's how it started, that kind of initial idea. But in terms of your kind of all your kind of products and things you offer to customers, I mean, could you give us maybe a summary of what those are and what touch points are there in terms of customer experience and business and you know, cinemas themselves?
Yeah, look, that's a big question. We sit across most of the life cycle of the value chain of the industry. So we work with distributors and the studios in terms of helping to promote their movies, in terms of payments, bookings, that sort of thing. We moved from there into cinema, which, as Stu said, was our day one part of the sector. We spread out pretty much through all touch points. So if you were to walk into a cinema in New Zealand, buy a ticket, get concessions, do it online, kiosk, at point of sale. If you were to then be part of the loyalty program and receive communications, we touch most of that. With the flix.co.nz website, we have a B2C component. And then on the back end, through some of our other distributor offerings, we're able to be the producer of record for box office data. And that's the currency of the industry. We're one of the few industries around the world where you'll sit at a dinner table and talk about how much a film grossed. We don't do that with cars or fridges. So having that currency is really important.
That's interesting, because I hadn't ever considered, to be honest with you, how that number, you know, comes up when you think about, maybe we'll talk about Barbenheimer and things like that today, but where those numbers come from. I mean, that's clearly a global requirement. You need to be linked throughout the globe. So, I mean, could you give us a sense of the kind of jurisdictions or kind of outreach of Vista as a business?
Yeah, today our business operates in 100 countries around the world, and just over 46% of the enterprise cinema market. And so that's organizations with greater than 20 screens outside of India and China. So pretty big market, use our software. And so amazing that this New Zealand company has been able to go around the world and create this level of market share. And the exciting thing is that all of our clients who use our products today, most of them use it on premise. So it's technology that was implemented in the theater and in the head office. And our mission now is to move all of those clients to the cloud. And that's what the journey we're on. That's what we're really excited about, bringing them to the cloud, but then also integrating our software so that they can really benefit from that. So just amazing opportunity for a New Zealand founded company to continue to grow around the world.
And when you talk about that move towards cloud, could you give us a sense of why is that so important, maybe from a business perspective, in terms of what advantages is that really bringing and why is it so significant for the business?
Yeah, so if I was to think of it for our clients and why it's important for them, there's a lot of hardware that at the moment they have to bear the cost of buying, maintaining, securing, and so on, that is really not their core competence. There is a lot of innovation that we're putting out to an on-prem world that takes a lot of time for them to adopt and upgrade and for us to even supply. And there is a range of different suppliers that they have to juggle. So from that infrastructure perspective, there is real efficiency at a time where efficiency is important for the industry. But I kind of think that's the tipping point. That's the hygiene factor. It's really about the innovation. And for us coming into a cloud world, what we're able to do is take all of the various businesses that sat within Vista back in the day and harmonize them, to bring them together, to cross-pollinate the best data output from our loyalty program to help make operational decisions, and to provide data science over the top of our solutions to help them to make sense, not just of the wealth of data, not just surface the insight, but make the recommendation on how they can take advantage of every opportunity. And from that perspective, we see the shift to cloud being mission critical. The other aspect, as I mentioned earlier, is we sit across the value chain. And so we have different technologies that support the studio and distribution side of the business, those who make and make the films available, and the exhibitors who make it available to the public. We have clients on both sides entering the same data in systems we provide that don't talk to each other. The cloud and the innovation that comes with it allows us to bridge this and drive real efficiency and effectiveness for the industry, which then allows them to focus on giving outstanding entertainment experiences to moviegoers. It's just not possible in an on-prem world with the lags. We're too nimble, and our competitors in broader forms of entertainment and media evolve too quickly for us to be in that old tech. But that's really from our client's perspective, from our perspective.
Yeah, from our perspective, it creates an opportunity for us to do more for our clients. And that's what's fueling the growth of the business. And so we're very focused on supporting the clients with new technology to move to the cloud. When we do that, we take on significant responsibility that the business or the client might do today. And so that's how we're growing the organization. That's what's creating the revenue uplift and the guidance that we're giving to the market. So the mission we're on at the moment is convert our existing clients to the cloud, but also grow market share as well. And so we've only got 46% of the market. There is still an opportunity for us to grow there as well. And certainly as we continue to produce more and more modern technology, cloud-based, that becomes more attractive for clients to sign on to our proposition as well. So both of those things are fueling our growth.
And then maybe that's a good point to sort of ask about, you know, staying ahead of the curve. You've got a market leadership position.
Yeah.
One then presumes that other, your competitors and other people in the industry are trying to kind of catch you. So how do you stay ahead of that curve? I mean, obviously the cloud is really, really significant. Is there a constant review of, are we doing this in the most efficient way? Do you have kind of big picture ideas out into the future? How do you stay ahead as a business over the long term?
Yeah, I think for us, there's two things. One, in terms of there's innovation coming from a technology perspective, and so we're always focused around what can we do with things, tools like AI, how can we put more innovation into our product area. And so bringing experience from outside our core business into the business is really important. But then from a broader market perspective, the area we serve in terms of entertainment, there's a huge heap of innovation going on in terms of leisure-based entertainment, out-of-home entertainment. And so we take cues from that. And so some of the key trends in the industry around things like eventization, and we saw that with Barbie and Oppenheimer, when suddenly it was like, let's have a great experience, let's really eventize this, bring people to the movies. So that's a trend that's going on, and we're making sure our technology can really support exhibitors to take advantage of that. The other thing that's happening in the market is we want more premium experiences And so this concept of when I go to the movies, I don't just want to pay for a ticket and maybe some popcorn. I actually want to sit down. I want to have a glass of wine. I want to make sure it's in a premium seat. I want to have a premium screen experience. So that exhibitor is investing in those experiences and that technology in terms of the screens and the sound and the seats, etc. What they then need is our technology to actually monetize that, to enable them to charge variable pricing, to enable them to market to people who might come to those movies and say, hey, here's a great deal. You liked this movie before. Here's a new one of the same genre coming. You might like this one. And so we're constantly looking outside of the industry in terms of what's coming in around family entertainment, around ticketing payments, you know, all of those trends, but also from a technology perspective, what's coming that we can take advantage. And we're really focused at the moment at putting AI at the center of things we're doing, both from a product perspective and being thoughtful and practical around that, but also as an organization. It creates an opportunity for us to continue to reimagine our business and how we produce product, how we think about our solutions. So there's a lot going on, both technically in the industry, but also the market we serve too.
I have to say, I saw Oppenheimer at cinema. Probably, I would say, I'm almost pretty confident would have been one of the ones that you provide for in a, you know, with the reclining seats, mm-hmm. and the button you press, you put your feet up. I don't think I can go back now after having that experience. You mentioned, Stu, you mentioned AI. I mean, Matthew, I'll just maybe building on that. It's obviously talked about so much across different industries, mm-hmm. sectors, the market. But could you give us, yeah, maybe that kind of practical sense, how you see it being applied to the Vista as a business, how you see it being applied to the products?
I think you nailed it there when you say it's being spoken of quite broadly. I joke it's a drinking game. If you don't mention AI in a meeting, it's unusual. And if you do, everyone stops and takes a drink. But the other word you said that I thought was critical was that it's practical. And for us, we're looking at AI very widely across the product in a way that's practical and business oriented. So what I mean by that is we're not looking at moonshots that take forever to develop. And we know we're not curing cancer. We don't want something gimmicky that's shiny and doesn't move the dial for our clients at all. So we're looking at practical examples, and I can give you a couple of those. We have an app that we launched a year ago called OneView, and OneView is aimed at CEOs and their senior executive team to keep their finger on the pulse of their business in the form of a mobile app. Now, what we realized is that if we wanted one of our objectives to come true, which was to be the first app a CEO and their team looked at every morning, it probably couldn't be visual only. So we have a bunch of tables, but you know, for those of you in the room, you can see the first thing I do each day is shave 360 degrees of my head. I'm not scrolling through an app. I can't absorb data. Other people are rushing around getting breakfast, getting the kids ready, commuting to school. So we realized it needed to be audio, and we partnered with Microsoft as one of their first movers in AI, and we've created an audio podcast purely generated by artificial intelligence for every one of our clients, and we'll be rolling it out in the next month. Wow. So it's 2 minutes that they can listen to where the table is turned into a script, the script is turned into a voice, and it'll put on their radar what they need to look at when they get to the office and can dive into the app and start to direct their day. One other example, so that's for the senior executives. For the marketers, Movio is the world leader in big data analytics and loyalty for the film industry. And we can do insane one-to-one personalization and recommendations. We have a team of data scientists that have come up with some of the most innovative and meaningful algorithms in the world. But the challenge you have when you have one-to-one opportunities and millions of members is that we've kind of given you the holy grail. It's in front of you, but you can't grab it because you haven't got the human bandwidth to deliver one-to-one iterations. So a couple of years ago, we put one algorithm in that selects the best movie everyone should see based on their tastes and the tastes of people like them, and we automatically serve all the artwork that goes into the emails. So that was one level. The next step that we've announced on our two-year roadmap is something we call First Draft, and it's going to write the copy. And it'll write the copy in the tone of every exhibitor. So it doesn't rely on the poor marketer to come up with millions of iterations. We will give it the smarts to get that right level of personalization. So when I look at AI, there's two reasons or two examples where we want it to be practical and move the dial, not shiny, trivial, and not waiting around forever to send us to the moon.
I guess, I mean, really, really fascinating, and obviously you can tell, you know, from both of you how passionate you are about the kind of the tech in terms of the opportunities that are going forward as well as what you have already. I think it comes back to, doesn't it, the fact that can a piece of technology save me time and make my life easier? It's not just something that, oh, people say I should use because everyone else is using it. And you know, use that example. I mean, not that I'm a senior chief executive, but in terms of saving time in the morning when you rush out with the kids and you need information, you know, that I can see the compelling case for something.
Practical and applied is what we're looking for, whether or not it's in our products, but also in our business as well, because the product is one opportunity, but how we build software, the way we do that, AI also provides some really interesting opportunities there. And, it, you know, when we develop software today, if we make changes, all of that has to be written about, all documented, et cetera. That's a pretty manual process. And the ability to use things like AI to read software and actually say, hey, these are the changes, this is, and update some of that documentation automatically in terms of developer notes, just frees up our development teams to start be creating more software. So there's some really practical examples of where we think we can continue to put these tools in the hands of our teams to make them more efficient, and quite frankly, make their jobs more enjoyable as well and rewarding.
I think from some of the previous comments that have been made here, you can really see the value of technology. You know, I've been in the industry long enough that, you know, I've been through multiplexes into gold class, into 3D, into digital, now recliners and extended dining. A lot of that has been around seat screen and sound for the most part, and extended food. The industry's done a lot of that now. And if they haven't, because we've had a rough couple of years as a sector, they don't have a lot of the cash to do it. So what focus for them needs to be is around efficiency and effectiveness and experience. And, you know, having been part of the joint venture that was Village Force back in the day, I can say there's never been a better time or a more essential time for us to help the industry, because it's technology that delivers the efficiency and the effectiveness and frees up a new service operating model to give outstanding entertainment experiences. So I kind of feel the baton has been passed to us as part of the sector to help our exhibitor clients through the use of technology to take the next leap forward for this industry. There's not a better time to be part of Vista.
100%.
Great stuff. Great stuff. I guess, I mean, you know, you've really, really got into the detail about the products. It's really, really, like I said, really fascinating, and can hear the passion as well. Maybe just reflecting on the industry more holistically, there was obviously, I would say, some fleeting debate 2 or 3 years ago during COVID of whether Netflix is going to replace movie going. Clearly, I mean, that's obviously not going to happen. I don't think so. I think everyone still enjoys going to the movie. So maybe, you know, what are your thoughts about the big kind of blockbusters, the movie trends more generally, whether it be the big sort of Marvel kind of popcorn releases, the art house, or everything else that's in between? And any particular thoughts or things, you know?
Do you want to start? And I'll round it out.
So why don't I break this into the exhibition side and the film side? So the buildings and the stories that come to them. We touched a little bit on the exhibition side. At the moment, it's about bigger formats, seeing it in IMAX, seeing it with a recliner. It's about spending more when you come. So not just on the ticket, but expanded food and beverage. And what we've also seen through our Movio data, we're seeing a trend towards larger group sizes. So all of that talks to eventization, especially when it's traded off at the moment a little bit with a lower frequency. So I mightn't come as often, but when I do, I'm coming with a big group of people. We're going to see it in the shiniest, largest way, and we're going to enjoy the food and beverage that comes with it. I think one of the areas we need to see shift is another layer to that, though, which is how do you casualize movie going? Like it was, you know, back in the day where you'd show up at the box office with friends and work out what you're going to see next. I think we need to reintroduce that. So there's a twin track of the eventizing and the everyday movie going. And then we're seeing the ancillaries pop up, as you mentioned, family entertainment centers, restaurants, all of them in the same building or precinct bouncing off each other to give a complete day or night out. On the film side, there is a swing back to theatrical. I mean, we can't ignore streaming as a competitor for the way people spend their time and money. But in a larger way, it's just a substitute for cable. You know, it's a new delivery platform. And there's a move away from original movies, and that's a whole other podcast as to why. And the studios have realized, because they tried it through the pandemic, that dropping a movie at home first reduces the downstream revenue and the overall pie. So they've realized the economics are better when you put it through a cinema. So that's bouncing back. And in fact, we find from streaming, those who have the most streaming services go to the movies the most often. So they're symbiotic there. But the last thing I would sort of touch on there is I think that we're going to see a change in content. You know, and this has happened in the 70s, it happened in the 90s, where the blockbusters, there's always going to be a place for franchise sequels, that sort of thing. But they might take a step back. and you're going to see original content pop up. And I might say original in inverted commas because Barbie and Mario Brothers were existing IP. They just weren't in the cinema. But you look at Oppenheimer popping up. In the 70s and the 90s, when that swung back, in the 70s, Spielberg, Lucas, Coppola all popped up. In the 90s, it was Tarantino, Soderbergh. I feel like we're almost there where we're going to have different layers of stories coming in. It'll be easier to produce them. AI will make that cheaper. It'll be easier to distribute them. And we'll see niches pop up. And some of them are happening already. Faith is a big one that we wouldn't have seen a few years ago. Horror continues to grow. We're seeing more and more foreign films. So the Japanese titles like Godzilla Minus One and The Boy and the Heron. So we're starting to see the breadth of storytelling come in as well. So that's where I see kind of the exhibition and the content that we show come through.
It's a great it's a great summary, and I think the more content we can put in theatres, and if you look at theatre design and what's going on there, real mixture of sizes and experiences, and that's all to cater for the different types of content as well. So the days of a big box sort of mall anchored single, you know, multiplex with just a whole lot of screens, I think are starting to go. It's all about, you know, big theatres, small theatres, big screens, small screens, recline, like creating an experience for the content and wrapping everything else around that. That's what's really exciting.
And just to maybe for myself, talk about that kind of sound and vision experience, the IMAX is the kind of comfy seats, the big screens. It's for me, what is interesting is the re-releases, because you've seen these lots of films growing up. You can't replicate the movie going experience. I would love to have seen XYZ at the cinema. I think the original Alien's going to get a re-release coming up. I'm going to go see that.
Yep.
Completely different experience.
Well, one of my favourite things last year was seeing Jaws in IMAX up the road here.
Goodness,
and
great.
There's a scene of a shooting star that's legit. They happen to capture it. You can't see it at home. Right. It was magical. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Maybe any final thoughts? I mean, just reflections again on the Vista business and your position, just to kind of round things out.
Look, I see us very much as the first phase of Vista Group. We did a great job, converted, helped a lot of clients be successful. The second phase, the opportunity are so significant, powered by the cloud and the other changes that are going on. That's what excites me, that excites the team to be able to really go out and grow. And so I think for our business, we're really only just getting started.
Great stuff. And anything else from you, Matthew?
Look, for me, I think one of the great things with Stu's tenure, which has just ticked over a year, is we've reorganized ourselves. And we had a number of independent products in the past that were each market leaders and ran a great race on their own, but they were tribal. In the role I'm fortunate enough to have overseeing product and innovation, now that we've come together and merged all our film products and all our cinema products and built bridges between them, my line is I get to play with all the Lego. And we can come up with solutions for our clients by picking the best ingredients from all parts of the business and come up with things we've never done to serve the business, serve the industry in ways they've never been served before.
Fantastic. Great stuff. I want to thank you both for coming in this morning. This just a couple of quick fire questions, if I may, and these are going to be very, very relevant. So maybe to both of you, starting with yourself, Stuart, what was the last thing you saw at the movies?
June 2. So I had the opportunity to see it at the brand new IMAX in Sydney, and as it was released, just epic scale sound experience, and they're like unbelievable.
It's almost taken it to another level.
I walked out of there, and literally an hour later, I could still feel the sound and the movie through me, and it's like that was epic.
Yeah, it's great.
Great story as well, told. So yeah.
Fantastic.
For me, it was Civil War. So I've seen a few films this year. I try and get there once a week, and that was the last one and the best one. It's a really interesting story, really ambiguous, which I love, and unfortunately pretty relevant at the moment. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And then maybe starting with you, Matthew, what is your favourite movie quote?
Most of them involve swear words as I was thinking about this. But being an Australian, back in 97, I was working for Village, and I was able to see one of the first screenings ever of The Castle, which they helped produce. And I'd have to say just about every week I quote The Castle in context. So whether it's Mabo, it's The Vibe, How's the Serenity, Tell Him He's Dreaming, it's part of our lexicon. So that would be my most quotable film.
Great stuff. Thanks, Matthew.
Given we're here, Stock Exchange, NZX, it would have to be Show Me the Money from Jerry Maguire.
Fantastic. Very, very apt. That's fantastic. I mean, I won't go, I add any myself, but I mean, in terms of movie quotes, I was also thinking about Wall Street, actually, when I was thinking what would be my one. But there we go. Stuart, Matthew, fantastic having you in here this morning. Really appreciate your time. Really fascinating conversation, and I'm sure we could chat for hours, I'm sure, about movies and everything. But thanks once again. All the best for the rest of the year, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you.
See you at the movies.
The information provided in this podcast is a guide and is intended for general information purposes only. The information is not investment advice. The information should not be relied upon as a substitute for detailed advice from a professional advisor. The podcast may contain opinions or forward-looking statements, and actual results may vary from what is expressed in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenter or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of NZX. NZX Limited is not liable for any loss suffered through relying on the information in this podcast. NZX makes no warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast. All intellectual property rights in the content of this podcast are owned or used under license by NZX, and NZX's written consent is required to use, redistribute, or reproduce the content, or use it to create other works.